Genesis 33. So Jacob looked up, and there was Esau, coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two female servants. He put the female servants and the children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground seven times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the woman and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the female servants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down, and last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What's the meaning of all these flocks and herds I met?" "To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." "No, please," said Jacob. "If I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Now that you have received me favorably, please accept the present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it.
Good evening. So when me and Narissa, or when actually Narissa came to me last time we did a youth service and said I'd like to help out with a youth talk, we were actually given quite a long verse, the whole of Genesis 32 and 33. So we kind of each went away, had a little bit of a look at it, and kind of both came back together, and we really wanted to focus on pretty much the same point, near enough for verse, which was really encouraging for me, definitely, to start off with. But just a bit of a backstory. So the story that we were looking at, it involves Jacob and Esau, two brothers, and it's very much a tale of two brothers who were kind of at loggerheads when they were in their youth. So one of the brothers, Jacob, he chooses to trick his father, Isaac, into giving him his inheritance, which was actually rightfully due to Esau. So because Esau was the oldest brother, back in those days that meant he was like the natural inheritor, regardless of what the wills and all the solicitors say. Esau was supposed to get what his father had. And in order to do that, Isaac wanted to bless Esau in the eyes of the Lord. So he sent him off to try and get a goat and prepare a meal, because that was what they did in those days. While Esau was gone, however, their mother, Rebekah, decided it wasn't really worth it. But for the prophecies that she'd heard, and it was the prophecies that were over her family. So she went to her other son, Jacob, and they decided to scheme a little bit, which right off the bat really isn't the best thing to do for your father, considering he's getting very old. So they'd planned to trick Isaac just to basically bless Jacob instead. So as I say, Isaac by this point was actually really old. Can't remember exactly how old, I've gone off my memory, but he was really, really old, and he'd lost his sight completely. So he couldn't see a single thing, but being the father that he was, he knew exactly, because he knew exactly how to tell one from the other. Esau was very, very hairy, like really, really hairy. The Bible makes a complete point out of describing how hairy Esau was, even down to the fact that the name Esau literally means the hairy one. There's a bit in Genesis that actually says that when Esau was born, he was red and hairy as a garment. I mean, that's... I've not got many hairy garments, but it sounds like a bit of a furry person. So, as I say, Rebekah and Jacob, they decide to scheme a little plot. They want to get Jacob blessed so that he can become sort of Lord of the Israelites. So what do? The same thing anybody else would. They hatch a plan to cover Jacob with goat's fur, because that's how you make people hairy, apparently. And then, so Jacob's covered in all this goat's fur, goes up to Isaac, says... I've brought you this meal, and basically tricks Isaac blessing him. When Esau comes back, however, as you can probably imagine, he's not best pleased. He's been off doing this hunting thing, getting all these fantastic game to come and give to his father, preparing to be blessed so that he could become Lord over his people, and Jacob's stolen it. It's just gone completely from under his feet. So I have a brother and a sister. And I think Esau's response to Jacob is probably exactly what I'd do to my brother and sister. He just vows he's going to kill him. Just job done. He's going to find Jacob and he's going to kill him there and then. But again, Rebekah has plans. Rebekah seems like this kind of very scheming mother. She knows exactly what's going on within her family and she wants a very direct way. So she sends off to her brother, Jacob's uncle. His name's Laban. And there Jacob hides out for 20 years, so a very, very long time. And Rebecca basically just said to Jacob, lie low, let your brother kind of simmer down a little bit, and just see what happens. And in that time, Jacob prospers. He gets two wives, he has sons himself, he gains sheep, cattle, herds, and he becomes quite a big person sort of in his little circle of people. But the Lord eventually calls Jacob to come home, and Jacob knows that Esau's going to be there, and he knows that Esau is not going to have forgotten what's happened. So Jacob sets on this road to return back to the family lands, and he's really, really worried at this point, because obviously he knows that he'd stolen basically Esau's livelihood from under his feet, and he's got a long distance to go, and he knows that there's no chance of retribution, and just forgiveness is completely off the cards for him. Go for it.
So you're probably wondering what the story about Jacob and Esau have to do with our lives nowadays. Well, we often hurt our friends and family like Jacob did, and we tend to hope that they will forgive us. There has been many times where I've hurt someone close to me, and I often get worried that they'll hate me forever. For example, a few weeks ago, me and a friend were hanging out when we were kind of winding each other up. It got to a point where they said something that annoyed me, so to get them back, I kicked them as a joke. Well, it kind of hurt a bit more than I intended to, and they got really upset. Suddenly, I realised that they might suddenly go off on a strop with me and then never, ever talk to me ever again. Then I got really upset because I didn't want to lose my best friend over a small little argument. Luckily, they could see that I didn't really mean to hurt them and they were still my friend. When we sin against others, we seek forgiveness. But how can we expect to be forgiven if we don't forgive others ourselves? In Matthew chapter 18, verse 21 to 22, it says, Peter came to him and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? 7 times? No, not 7 times, Jesus replied, but 70 times 7. In this, Jesus is telling us that when we forgive, we shouldn't just forgive once, but instead forgive many times.
So when we look through the Bible, the bits of teachings on forgiving one another is actually very cut and dry. There's no sort of grey area for this. The Lord teaches us that if this eye for eye mentality is just not the Lord's way, there's no kind of go and seek revenge on the person who does wrong of you, because that's just not what the Lord wants for us. A verse from Matthew 5, Jesus teaches us that if someone slaps your left cheek, you basically turn your face to them and let them slap the right. And that's kind of what the Lord wants us to do. Now, I completely appreciate that's not easy. It's, you know, if someone does wrong to you, it's not easy just to say, okay, that's fine, you're instantly forgiven. There are times when people will do things to us and we'll struggle and it'll take time. And it takes us a little while to sort of get to that point where we're kind of willing to accept kind of that mercy upon them and give them that forgiving heart. But in the story that we're looking at tonight, that's not really what's happening. You know, Jacob wasn't going back to Esau to go and forgive Esau. You know, Esau's not done anything wrong at this point other than maybe threatening to kill his brother, which is completely different. Jacob was going to seek forgiveness. You know, he was going to try and get redemption for something which, at the end of the day, did fundamentally change Esau's life. You know, because of what Jacob and Rebecca did, Esau went from Esau, Lord of the Israelites, to Esau, the hairy red Edomite. Bit of a different when you weigh the two things up. So as me and Arissa were looking through this, I kind of was pondering over this sort of sense of forgiveness. And for me, I often find that receiving forgiveness can be a lot more difficult than actually forgiving others. So if we kind of look at it from Jacob's perspective, he's been away from his family. He's been with his uncle Laban for sort of 20 years, and he's had the time to sort of think about all these different things that Esau would be thinking and like plotting on doing him. You know, just as Narissa was saying, Jacob would have felt this sense of guilt and this sense of fear of actually returning to his brother, because he just didn't know how he was going to react. You know, there might have been a slight possibility that there might have been some forgiveness there, but at the end of the day, the terms that they left on, Esau wanted to kill him. So there is possibility that that's going to be who's going to return to. When we actually forgive others, though, we have control over that situation. Like I said, we might struggle for a little while, for a long time, to actually forgive someone, but that sort of sense of forgiveness is something that we have. we can sort of wrestle with our emotions, and we can even wrestle with God about when that right time is to sort of pass that forgiveness on to someone who has done wrong to us. But at the end of the day, that is something that we can do. For Jacob, you know, he was going sort of on a limb that he was hoping to receive this forgiveness. He was really scared, up to the point where, as the reading said, you know, he split his family in two. He was that scared. He wanted to just guarantee even just a little bit of survival for his lineage. He separated his family, sent one way, and the other came with him as they were approaching Esau. And all he could really do was hope and pray for just a bit of mercy.
When Jacob returns, he's really scared about what Esau will do, but he's actually unaware about the things that God has been doing in Esau's life already. It will be easy to think that because Jacob received Esau's birthright, then Esau would have continued his life with little prospect of hope. But we see in Genesis 33, verse 9, it says, Esau said, "But I already have plenty, my brother," which shows that despite not being blessed by Isaac, the Lord still provided for him. What we can learn from this is that we shouldn't be afraid of seeking forgiveness, because the Lord can soften others' hearts, and that the Lord will always provide for us. Similar to what I said earlier, the Bible tells us that we need to forgive others to receive God's forgiveness. In Matthew 6, verse 12, it says, "Forgive us our sins or transgressions, as to the extent that we forgive others." After that prayer, Jesus gave an explanation and said, "If you don't forgive others, neither will your Father in heaven forgive you." We know that sadly, when we are seeking forgiveness from others, we may not always be forgiven. However, we know that God will always forgive us, so long as we forgive others. This is why we shouldn't be afraid of seeking forgiveness.
So, as we kind of come into land, if I could invite the band back up just before we continue in worship, I kind of just want to echo what Narissa just said about this sort of sense of forgiving others so that we can receive forgiveness. But if we look at 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 12 to 17, it says, "God used me as an example to show everybody how merciful he is. Because I was a persecutor of the church and a blasphemer and a violent aggressor, and yet God showed me mercy to set an example that he'd forgive even the chief of sinners." Sometimes we do things that, you know, we're not proud of, things that we regret and wish had never happened. Sometimes we do things that hurt others and hurt the ones that we care about. And quite often we're not even aware of the things that we do that cause that pain. But the Lord calls us to turn the other cheek, forgive those who sin against us. But he also knows at the end of the day that we are only human. And sometimes, as I said, that can be really hard. So as we prepare to sort of lift our voices in praise to the Lord, let's just remember that we have a God who is a God of forgiveness. Even if we, the chief of sinners, struggle to find that place in our hearts to forgive others, the Lord's always going to be there to show us that forgiveness and that mercy, so that when we find the right time to approach those that have done us wrong or the things that we do wrong to others, he can help aid that sort of sense of reconciliation to one another.